Hello, this is MacDonald Hastings talking to you from the British Broadcasting Corporation in London. In one crowded day, in one small patch of London, round about the Houses of Parliament and Piccadilly Circus, I've been passionately kissed by three girls who seemed to think I was Quentin Reynolds. I've been heaved onto the top of a streetcar by a group of sailors who conceived the notion that I ought to see what the world looked like up there. I've been crowned with a paper hat labelled Good Old Ike. I've been put in temporary charge of a small girl with a red, white and blue ribbon in her hair who asked me when we were going to see Cinderella in her golden coach. I've sung Land of Hope and Glory till I'm hoarse, and I still don't know the words. I've met a man who actually asked me what on earth all the noise was about. I've burnt the soles off my shoes on pavements that were hot with the friction of human feet. I've been wafted on a carpet of cheering people from the main entrance of Parliament to the side entrance of Buckingham Palace without any conscious movement of my legs. I've climbed my first and positively my last lamppost, and I've nearly persuaded myself, but not quite, that the war's over. All VE Day I kept saying to myself, this is it. This is what we've all been waiting for. No more bombs, no more nights in the air raid shelter, no more sudden death out of the sky, no more blackout. This is peace in Europe. Peace at last. But you can't efface 6 years by waving a flag and putting your head in a paper hat. Peace is something you need time to get used to, like a new house. And even on VE Day, when London went mad, it looked wrong somehow to see uncurtained windows, lights blazing in the streets. And when rockets hissed and banged overhead, when the London skyline was outlined in the glow of victory bonfires, I had to tell my heart not to jump. I had to make a conscious effort to remind myself that everything now is different, that fires and explosions at night can be friendly. The changeover to peace in London is going to be as difficult as those first weeks of war in September 1939. Waiting for the announcement of peace in London, I couldn't help thinking how like it was to those hours when we were all waiting for the first air raid on London after the declaration of war. On both occasions, what we all expected didn't happen. There was the same taut atmosphere in the air. There was the same heart flutter of expectation. The same maddening inactivity while we waited for news. And at the end of it all, the same sense of almost bewilderment, of anticlimax. The end of the war, like its beginning, didn't run true to form. Who could have guessed on September the 3rd, 1939, as we searched the skies anxiously for the first bombs on London, who could have guessed that the real war wouldn't start until months later? And of all the possibilities as to how the war might end, who'd have thought of peace by installments? During the phony war period, as we called it, of 1939, I remember people used to ask, what are we waiting for? And on the night of May the 7th, 1945, nearly 24 hours after the surrender of the German forces, I heard Londoners asking each other the same question again. What are we waiting for? The actual event was so utterly different, wasn't it, from what we'd all imagined the coming of peace would be like. And momentarily, I think we all felt a little disappointed. As if an exciting play had petered out to a dull ending. For years, we'd talked about VE Day, made songs about it, promised ourselves what we were going to do. And somehow, the whole idea of it was connected with the dramatic announcement, as in 1918. A sudden stoppage of all work, and one tremendous outburst of rejoicing. But it didn't happen that way. The war with Germany kept up its record of surprises to the last. For 24 hours, we hesitated between something which was neither official war nor official peace. On the night of May the 7th, the crowds waiting for news in Piccadilly Circus made a demonstration of rejoicing, but they hadn't got their hearts in it. And finally, the very heavens showed their disapproval. A thunderstorm in May, a portent if ever there was one, drove the revelers home. And that night, I almost believed that V-Day in London was going to be a flop. I ought to have known my own city better. Londoners had long ago made up their minds what they were going to do on V-Day. And if the rejoicings were delayed, it could still make no difference to the rejoicings. London lets her hair down very seldom. But when she does make up her mind to it, she's like a virago. Every great city celebrates its triumphs in its own way. New York, in a frenzy of excitement, showers itself with ticker tape. Moscow blasts off 100-gun salutes. Paris dances on the boulevards. London, dear old matronly London, pulls up her skirts and goes mafficking. And mafficking, so called because the first time it happened was when the news reached London that mafficking had been relieved during the Boer War. Mafficking is London's own way of making carnival. It means putting out the flags, putting on paper hats, and making a noise. But its peculiar character seems to be that everybody climbs on to something. The more unusual the perch, the better. I saw people on V-Day on the roofs of buses, streetcars. For a precarious minute or two, I was on one myself. I saw people up lampposts, on the top of public monuments, and hanging in dozens on any vehicle courageous enough to venture out into the streets. The crowds blocked the roads. Everybody was cheering, singing themselves hoarse. And in the most surprising way, everybody, except the children, who nearly all seemed to be crying their eyes out with sheer excitement and exhaustion, everybody was in bubbling good humor. Within a square mile of Piccadilly Circus on V-Day, there must have been hundreds of thousands of children. Children of all ages, from wide-eyed, bald-headed babies in arms, looking like miniature Churchill, to school children with flags in their hands and ribbons in their hair. Sitting on the shoulders of their parents, overlooking the crowd, the children dominated the sea of people. And they'd all been brought to the celebrations for the same reason. In a million London homes, father said to mother, "Well, I think we ought to take the kids to see the sights. It'll be a long day for them, but they'll never see another day like it, and the children will have something to remember for the rest of their lives." And so everybody brought the children to see Mr. Churchill drive through London on the greatest day of his life, to stand in the cloisters of Westminster Abbey, to cheer the King and Queen on the balcony of Buckingham Palace. Just outside the inner ring of London, the streets on V-Day were quite empty. Inside it, the whole population was sardined together in a solid mass that spread, so far as I could calculate in the thick of it, over a square mile. Among the crowds, hopelessly bogged down, was the remains of the London traffic. The drivers just sat at the wheels and grinned, or did their best to prevent the crowds from smothering the vehicles completely. I saw the roof of one baby car collapse under the combined weights of 6 6-foot Grenadier Guardsmen. It was impossible to walk freely. All you could hope to do was to move with the natural rhythm of the crowd, but as nobody wanted to go anywhere in particular, as the fun of the thing was just being in the crowd, in the party, it didn't matter. Everywhere on the pavements there were street hawkers selling paper hats with inscriptions on them like, "Well done, Monty," "Let's make whoopee," "Kiss me quick," "Any gun, chum," and there were huge stalls filled with the flags of all the Allied nations, and some nations which I couldn't even identify. Thousands of people, too, seemed to have cameras with films in them. Now, that was surprising, because in Britain, photographic materials have been virtually unobtainable for years. So the films must have been saved long after the outside exposure date printed on the packet. But the weather, although there was a thundery atmosphere in the air, stayed fine. And so perhaps most of the pictures will come out. It's quite impossible for any one person to give a coherent impression of everything that happened on this, the greatest day, as Mr. Churchill called it, in Britain's history. No one person could have got round. The memory we shall all carry in our hearts forever, is the sight of the King and Queen on the floodlit balcony of Buckingham Palace.
Mr. Churchill, enveloped by Londoners, his own Londoners, as he progressed down from Downing Street to the House of Parliament to announce the peace. But each of us, too, will have his own memories. Memories, most of them, of mere trifles. Personally, of all the things that happened to me on V-Day, I treasure the memory of a London mother scolding a tear-stained child. He was a very small boy, with a Union Jack sewn on his tummy and another bedraggled flag in his hand. The top of his head reached not much higher than the knees of the crowd, and all his memories of V-Day must be just legs. As I saw him, I overheard his mother saying to him, "If you wanted to sit down, why did you come?" For me, that remark was the best thing on V-Day. Well, I haven't talked about the official programme of events. Somehow, the ebullition of London in triumph was the only thing on VE Day that seemed important. Throughout this long war in Europe, from the beginning of it right to the end, London has been the main wedge that's kept the door of freedom open. At the finish, well, it wouldn't have been surprising to find that she'd had all the stuffing bashed and battered out of her. But London has come out of the hardest fight of her life as fresh, as virile, more fresh, more virile than she went into it. What rose out of the ashes of the Blitz on V-Day blew the lid off. And London, in the triumph of her own liberation, put up posters on her bombed buildings, "War still in the Pacific." Now this is MacDonald Hastings saying goodbye to you from the British Broadcasting Corporation in London.
This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.